Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, well, I'm not buying what Dan Mullen has been selling about Saturday's game. Plus, I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong over the past week, and we'll do our Tuesday Top 10 a little bit later on, related to Dan Mullen. Which coaches in college football are in the biggest trouble here moving forward? Which ones are coaching for their jobs? Along the same lines, college basketball begins today. Caught up with Patrick Stevens last hour of the Washington Post, giving a great breakdown of the college basketball season. You can catch that on demand if you missed it. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. But Frank Martin, very much on the hot seat, coaching for his job as well. Now, I said at the end of last hour, I had done this research last year when we were having the conversation of, you know, will he be back? Won't he be back? He's really in uncharted territories here in that Frank is the first coach to make the NCAA tournament three times. How many have they been? They've been there how many times to the NCAA tournament? Well, now I got to double check this because I'm looking at my notes and I feel like I wrote this down wrong in terms of the number of appearances. But he is the first coach in 50 years. Yeah, they have only made it that one time, the Final Four. That's hard to believe. So he is the first coach in 50 years in the SEC to make it to fewer than two tournaments, NCAA tournaments, and still get to a 10th year as head coach. Teams just usually don't have that much patience. And as Patrick Stevens said when he joined us last hour, right now the Final Four is going back to 2017, so we're talking this is the fifth year. And if you go 5 years from there without getting back to the tournament, you don't have to make it to the Final Four again, but can you at least get back to the tournament within 5 years of making a Final Four run? And yet, you know, they've been really a 500 program since then. That's just not good enough. Usually coaches don't even get this opportunity. One tournament appearance in 10 years. That's not good enough. The last one was Bill Lynn at Auburn 50 years ago. It's only happened three times in the SEC ever where a coach, and 50 years ago, that's going back to the early 70s. So when it has happened, it was a little bit different. Fewer teams are making the tournament. You didn't care so much about, you know, college sports weren't as big of a deal. It wasn't on national TV. We're talking about some of these coaches that happened, you know, in the 40s, the 50s. You're not firing coaches so quickly like we are now where it's so competitive. Now more teams than ever make the tournament. The SEC is making more money than ever. They're investing more money into basketball. It is easier now than it was back then to make the tournament. And still, even back then, it normally wouldn't happen. But just three times, I guess Frank would now be the fourth in SEC history that a coach had just one tournament appearance and lasted to at least a 10th season at the school. According to my notes here, let me see. I think Country Graham, I didn't write down the years. But Country Graham, you could Google it. I mean, just listen to Country Graham. That sounds like a long time ago. He was there for 13 years at Ole Miss, never made a tournament. And Emmett Lowry was at Tennessee for 12 years, never made a tournament. A couple of coaches at Missouri, but that was back when they were in the Big Eight. And then Bill Lynn, as I said, at Auburn, 50 years ago was the last time that has happened in the SEC. So in the SEC, but really all of college basketball, you're not used to seeing a coach get this long of a leash with one tournament appearance lasting to a 10th year. You got to show me something. You got to do something. I don't know if they will this year. We'll see if the Gamecocks have good enough shooters. That's been the big issue. You got to be able to shoot nowadays. They're trying to increase the tempo. They're trying to come around to this idea. Frank has acknowledged it. We need better shooters. That's how you win in basketball these days. We'll see if that's the case. And for Clemson in the ACC, which should be improved this year, the focus, of course, will be on Hubert Davis, his first year at UNC, Coach K leaving at Duke. What about Jim Boeheim? How much longer is he going to stick around at Syracuse? Even Leonard Hamilton's in his 70s. He does a great job at Florida State. You know, is he going to have a farewell tour here soon enough a la Coach K, or even just stepping away like Roy Williams. But when it comes to Clemson trying to compete, it's tough. I mean, they made the tournament a year ago, and they're kind of similar to South Carolina. I mean, they were last in the conference last year in offense, and they weren't a great offensive team. And then on top of that, they lose their best player from a year ago, they lose their best guard, and they lost their best recruit. So, you know, I mean, good luck now. We'll see if either one of these teams, that's going to be the issue or the key, Clemson or South Carolina, if they can just score it well enough. But college basketball begins today, tipping off at 3 o'clock. Really, you'll have those games here or there. Tonight, you got Duke and Duke-Kentucky, is it, at MSG? You'll have your big-time games every once in a while early in the season. But college basketball is kind of like the NBA, that you wait till Christmas, until the conference schedule begins to really dive in. You still got football going on. You're watching these teams play Johnson and Wales and Carver College. I'm like, oh, I don't really care about that yet. And then once you get towards, like, December, you know, this first month of the season, there's a lot of these cupcakes. Yeah, and South Carolina will play like Presbyterian and South Carolina State, and it's like, that's not really intriguing. Then once you get towards December and you get towards the conference schedule and maybe Clemson and South Carolina play, and you think, okay, right now it's starting to get a little interesting. But college basketball begins today. You may not pay a ton of attention to it here in the next couple of weeks, but add another thing now to the list. We got college basketball tipping off this afternoon. So we have Citadel basketball tonight against Pittsburgh. I was supposed to be there in Pittsburgh. Right, full disclosure here, peel back the curtain. Maybe you've been able to tell, I'm not in Pittsburgh. I'm not in a hotel room in Pittsburgh. We are here in the studios, and we'll be doing the game tonight from, you know, remotely here from the low country. I was supposed to be in Pittsburgh. It's nobody's fault. You know, some miscommunication with COVID, this and that, all good. I'll be on the road with the team for the rest of the season, and I haven't been to a Citadel road game now going back, you know, 2 years, of course, because of the pandemic. So looking forward to getting back on the road, especially when we go to Duke. But I was supposed to be in Pittsburgh yesterday, today, tomorrow with the team, get ready for the game tonight. So I thought, if I can't be in Pittsburgh, let's bring Pittsburgh to the studio. Let's pretend like I'm in Pittsburgh for the afternoon. Because after all, it is radio. It's theater of the mind. So we're going to spend the next 2 hours as if I am in Pittsburgh. Experience. And I've been to Pittsburgh before, and a lot of people hate on Pittsburgh. I liked it. A nice little city. All those bridges. It's on the water. Steel City, of course. So we're going to bring Pittsburgh here to the low country. And pretend as if I am in Pittsburgh hanging out for the next 2 hours. That's right. Mr. Rogers took place in Pittsburgh.
How about Mr. Robinson? Eddie Murphy's Saturday Night Live skits.
There we go. Now I feel like I'm in Pittsburgh. I'm walking down the street. Like I'm in the neighborhood of Mr. Rogers. Joe, were you a Mr. Rogers guy at all?
I did watch that when I was a kid.
He was on for 31 years. They did 912 episodes. Crazy. 1968 to 2001. I don't know if I was ever actually... I knew who he was and everything. I was familiar, but I don't know. I don't remember ever actually like sitting down and having to watch Mr. Rogers growing up. Have you seen the movie about Mr. Rogers?
No, I have not.
Yeah, me either. I will at some point. I've heard good things. With you, so let's make the most of this beautiful day. Yes, in Pittsburgh today. We might as well say, looking out the windows, seeing the factories, the Steel City, my neighbor, the rivers, the bridges. Oh, what a view in Pittsburgh today.
How many of those factories are functioning?
Yeah, good question. Yes, thank you, Mr. Rogers. Setting the mood.
I'm glad we're together again.
So am I, in Pittsburgh today. I was really, what I was most looking forward to going to Pittsburgh was actually the Permanente Brothers sandwich. So I got to find a local place. Does any restaurants around here do that, or can I customize a sandwich? It's like the fries and the coleslaw on the sandwich. I got to find somewhere around here. I got to order one of those delivered to the studio for lunch today, because that's what I would try to eat if I was in Pittsburgh today.
And I guess you'd have to find somewhere which serves Iron City beer.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm going to have to do that and, you know, get real sauced up for the broadcast tonight have the real Pittsburgh experience. Now, Pittsburgh is also well known for a lot of, like, inventions or things that began there. For example, the Big Mac was first started in Pittsburgh. It was the McDonald's that was located in Pittsburgh, and I forgot the year. I don't have it in front of me. I think it was 1983, maybe it was 67, something like that. But the Big Mac started in Pittsburgh. Of course, you also know about Heinz Ketchup. That's why the stadium is named after Heinz. Heinz was started in Pittsburgh. So not only do I have to go find my my own Primanti Brothers sandwich, I'm going to have to create that somehow, but I'm also going to have to go get a Big Mac with plenty of Heinz Ketchup, because that's another thing I would do if I was in Pittsburgh. So throughout the afternoon, I'm going to act as if I am in Pittsburgh. We're going to have to turn up the air conditioning in here and make it real chilly, because I'm sure it's colder there than it is here today. Today was beautiful driving in this morning. And I'm going to go drive over some bridges later on, plenty of those around here, and go get a Primanti Brothers sandwich and a Big Mac with plenty of ketchup and act as if I'm in Pittsburgh getting ready for this Idol game tonight instead of doing it from the studios. And I'll watch a little Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood later on. So there you go. And I'm going to have to start saying, what do they say, yins? Right, I'm going to have to start saying yins instead of y'all or you guys or anything like that, or you.
No, I think it's yous guys.
Yous guys? All right. Either way, I'm going to have to start saying that. You thought I said Bengals weird. Wait till I start saying yous guys and yins for the next 2 hours. And then we'll see who's complaining. So for the next 2 hours, you have no idea. It's radio. I'm in Pittsburgh right now. It's very cold. I'm looking outside at the water. Going to go get a Primanti Brothers sandwich in a little bit and get ready for Citadel basketball tonight. Let me circle back to Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen with the loss Saturday against the Gamecocks. A listener had reached out to the show yesterday. I did not see this until we got off the air, but he said, are we just going to ignore the fact that Florida had 20 to 30 players dealing with the flu, one of which was Emory Jones? Yeah, I think I am going to ignore that fact. To me, that's not that big of an issue. I mean, for one, hello, Michael Jordan once had the flu and played great. I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek. But for Florida, they didn't have Anthony Richardson. Emory Jones is out there playing with the flu, but the Gamecocks also had a third-string quarterback making his first-ever appearance at the FBS level, right, and doing so in the SEC. Came from St. Francis, which, by the way, is also in Pennsylvania, not far from where I'm located right now at my Pittsburgh hotel. And so, you know, for Florida, the other thing, too, about this is what I always dislike is when people bring up these reasons after the game, because then it just sounds like an excuse. And if I'm Dan Mullen, I don't think that's a I think that's a cop-out and not being a good leader. Whether it affected the game or not, I don't know. My issue is the way it was handled by Mullen getting to the podium and saying, well, by the way, we had 20 to 30 guys dealing with the flu. If they won, I don't think he's saying that. But you should say it first, because we all know, look, I'm still essentially a kid at heart. So I go back to my days of playing video games, and you always had the buddy who would choose the bad team when you were playing Madden. So that when you beat him in Madden, well, what do you expect? I was the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, yeah, but that was the choice he made. Now, this is a little bit different. This wasn't a choice they made. But my point being, you don't bring it up before until you lose or something goes wrong, and then you point to that as your excuse. You would beat your buddy in Madden. He would say nothing about picking the worst team before kickoff. Then you play, you win, and once you win, then he says, well, I mean, I was the Jaguars. South Carolina embarrasses Florida. Dan Mullen then steps to the podium and for the first time offers up, well, we had 20 to 30 guys with the flu. What do you expect? I don't like that from a coach. Right? I want a coach to get up there and be a leader and put it on his shoulders and say, hey, we didn't play well enough, yada, yada, yada. And then if you really want, the real play for Dan Mullen would be to leak that to a media member and have a media member then tweet afterwards. Hey, Florida played, you know, source tells me or whatever, school tells me Florida had 20 to 30 guys playing with the flu tonight, including Emory Jones. And then you get the sympathy that way from people who read that and say, oh, you know, Florida, well, they were dealing with something. But I don't like my head coach coming to the podium to offer up excuses after getting blown out. And I see that in that scenario as an excuse. You tell me that during the week, you know, hey, we got some guys dealing with the flu right now. They can't practice. You know, we'll see if they're available Saturday. We're still looking forward to the game and putting together a good effort, yada, yada, yada. Okay, that's not coming off as an excuse to me. You're just letting us know what's going on. But when you come to the podium after the game and say, hey, by the way, I know we got blown out today, but did you know that we had 20 to 30 guys with the flu? Cut us some slack. To me, that's just an excuse. I don't want to hear that from my coach. I want to hear my coach, you know, kind of take one for the team. Say, hey, we were lousy tonight. We weren't good enough. And then if you want, like I said, the trick is to then leak it to a media member, have them put that out for you, have them be the messenger, because then that message, I think, looks a little bit better than the coach getting to the podium after a bad loss offering that up. How bad were they affected by it? Who had the flu? How were they feeling? You know, was Emory Jones, would he have played better if he didn't have the flu? I have no idea. But you also have a South Carolina team on the other side that, you know, they're using their third-string quarterback, and Florida has more talent on the roster than South Carolina anyways. So I don't feel overly, I don't feel all that bad for Florida and whatever they were dealing with getting ready for this game, because to me, they still had the advantage when they took that field against South Carolina. So I guess I will ignore that fact. And I just, my big takeaway was I didn't like how that message was delivered. I don't like a coach coming to the podium after the game and offering up that detail like it's some sort of excuse or the reason why they didn't play well, because I don't think it was. If those guys didn't have the flu, would Florida then win by 20? Would it have made a 43-point difference? I don't think so. Now, here was Shane Beamer was on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday on our sister station, and Beamer was talking about that win against Florida. Here's what the coach of the Gamecocks said about that big win Saturday and now trying to build on it.
It was great from a coach standpoint because it showed our guys how hard we worked in practice in the last 2 weeks. And we got better as a football team during the open week, and we got better as a football team leading into the Florida week. And then the way we played on Saturday night validated a lot of that. And, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, we had a lot of recruits that were at the game on Saturday night that were excited about what they saw on the field and in the stands from our crowd and the environment here. When I picked up my phone after the game, I had a ton of text messages from recruits that weren't at the game but watched it on TV and loved what they saw. So it validates a lot of things from on the field and off the field. But you're right, you know, you certainly enjoy it Saturday night. It was a late game, got home late and get some rest and wake up Sunday morning and get right back to work on a tough Missouri team that we've got to go out and now play on the road out in Missouri this weekend. So you can't enjoy it long, but you know, it'll become one thing my dad used to always say. I mean, that Florida game was a big win, but it can become an even bigger win if now we build on it and play even better down the stretch in these last three games.
Yeah, I like everything that was said there. I mean, that was the message I got tried to get across yesterday as well about, you know, if you're ever struggling at something without doing, you're working hard, but you don't see the fruits of your labor, you don't see the success, you can start to get burnt out. You're working hard at work, right, and you never get acknowledged by the boss. You don't get a raise. You don't get a promotion, nothing. And it's like, what am I doing this for, right? Nobody even notices. They don't care. They don't appreciate what I'm doing. You know, you can kind of get burned out, just like for the Gamecocks, for all these football teams. It's why football teams can fall apart quickly, because practice is hard. It's the one sport where practice is harder than the games. And so if you're not seeing the results, it's like, why am I going through the weight training and the workouts and the long days and practice, and then I go out there and put myself through a car accident every weekend and we're not winning anyways? It's why teams can check out quicker, I think, in football than even basketball. Or baseball's a long season, so they have to deal with that. You know, when you're a bad team and you think like, oh, we still have another 3 months of this, that's brutal. But football's a physical sport that, you know, when you're getting beat up, it's like, forget this. We're a lousy team, and I'm putting my body on the line every week to go lose by 30. That's not worth it. And so when you finally see some sort of results, it's kind of like also when you're working out, and it could take a little while to start seeing the results when you're trying to lose weight, and you step on the scale, and you're like, man, I've been going to the gym for 2 weeks. I haven't lost a pound yet. But then once you get over that hill, that hump, and you start eating better, and you finally get your body, you know, conditioned, and you hit a nice groove where you start to see the pounds come off, and you step on that scale, and you see the lower number, and now you're motivated, and you think like, oh, yeah, this is working. Let me keep going back to the gym. And it was similar for Saturday. The Gamecocks are winning some games, but against bad teams, close performances, even in wins, they weren't playing that great or looked that good. Then you go out there and you beat Florida by 23, and you see like, oh, yeah, you know what? All this hard work is going to pay off. This is what we're capable of. And I also like what Beamer said at the end, though, you know, that you try to build off of this and turn it into something. Because if you go out there and you lose to Missouri by double digits this week, or say you don't win another game the rest of the season, then it would still be a good win against Florida, but it's more kind of a footnote on the season. Like, won five games in Beamer's first year, but they did beat Florida. But now if you come out and say you do beat Missouri, or just hypothetically speaking, let's daydream a little bit, you beat Clemson at the end of the year and you go to a bowl game, right? You look at it and say like, wow, they beat Florida. Then they came back, won whatever against Missouri or Clemson, get to go to a bowl game. Maybe you win a bowl game and you look back and say like, yeah, it all started with that Florida win. If you come out and you lay an egg Saturday against Missouri, you don't feel as good about that Florida game. You look at it, it's like, wow, maybe that was just an outlier. I mean, we still got beat up by Missouri. But it can be the start of something here to finish this year strong in year one of Shane Beamer. Coming up, I'll let you know where I've been right and wrong. Plus, we'll get to our Tuesday Top 10, which coaches are in the most trouble right now in college football. We'll get to that coming up. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Getting ready for the Citadel in Pittsburgh tonight. Unfortunately, not in Pittsburgh. We'll be doing the game remotely, so we're bringing. I'm trying to bring Pittsburgh to at least myself here in the Lowcountry. You can always text the show, 843-608-1754. And on the text line, I'm told about Steel City Pizza. Offers up Pittsburgh cuisine. So I spent the whole commercial break Googling Steel City Pizza. I've heard of them. I've heard of that place. I don't think I've ever actually eaten from there. Let me tell you, just looking at the website, my goodness, I haven't eaten at all yet today. My mouth is watering. I'm not going to be able to do the rest of the show. I'm going to have to mop up the table here. This pizza looks good. It says Pittsburgh-style pizza. I said the same thing about Detroit. I didn't know all these cities had their own style of pizza. How many different ways can you make pizza? And apparently there's a Pittsburgh style. And looking at the menu and the pictures, it looks really good. I don't know if they have some sort of knockoff Primanti Brothers sandwich, but Steel City Pizza with that Pittsburgh-style pizza. They also claim that they have the best pizza in Charleston, so there you go. Steel City Pizza. May have to get, we're going to have to get them to deliver here to the studio and pretend it's Pittsburgh.
Okay, now, a lot of people know what New York style is and Chicago style is.
Right.
Okay, so what is Pittsburgh style and what is Detroit style?
Well, so Detroit style, I have no idea. I just go off of the commercials. I don't know what commercial that is. Is that Domino's? I don't know who it is. But they put, like, it just looks like they put the sauce on top of the pizza, on top of the cheese, or, like, additional sauce. That looks like Detroit style. I have no idea. I've been to Detroit. I never heard anything about the pizza. Just like I've been to Pittsburgh. I don't remember hearing anything about the pizza. I'm trying to look up Pittsburgh-style pizza.
Well, Detroit might not have any pizza parlors left.
Yeah, I don't know what they got left. The case for Pittsburgh pizza. I don't know. This is a whole article. I don't have time. I'm on the radio. I don't have time to read this. Pittsburgh-style pizza crust usually comes out of the oven medium, crisp, puffy, and chewy. A perfect combination. I don't know. And then I see here also Google tells me Cleveland-style pizza and Omaha-style pizza. It's all the same. You can't really differentiate the pizza too much. It's all the same type of pizza. So anyways, I may have to check that out, though. Get them delivered. Also, I see that Pittsburgh is experimenting self-driving Uber cars. So, Joe, order me a Tesla, please, and I'm going to have that take me around today like I'm taking an Uber around Pittsburgh, driving me, and I'm going to sit in the back seat.
Oh, just a Tesla? How about two?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So get on that, please, as the producer of the show, and I'll have one of those drive me around the rest of the day to get ready for the game tonight.
I'll call Mr. Musk himself.
Perfect. Friend of the show, Elon Musk. Big time. Elon, if you're listening, and we know that you are, I request two Teslas, please, for me and my staff here at the studios for the rest of the afternoon. Pronto. Thank you. And also, by the way, Andy Warhol's from Pittsburgh, so his museum is there. They have all sorts of museums. They have a Big Mac museum. They have a Heinz ketchup museum. Pittsburgh loves their museum. If they have any reason, they have a Mr. Rogers museum. If they have any reason to celebrate something that came from, right, that's like a sense of insecurity in Pittsburgh. And I don't know how many listeners we have from the Pittsburgh area, but come on here. Every time you got something from the town, they're creating a museum about it. Andy Warhol, Mr. Rogers, Heinz ketchup. Who's going to the Heinz ketchup museum? What do you really want to know about that? It never comes out of the bottle. That's what they could teach you. How to get the ketchup out of the bottle when you're at the diner. That's what I want to know. Need a whole museum for it. All right, every week I let you know where I'm right, where I'm wrong in the sports world. I give you big opinions, but I try to hold myself accountable. We usually start where we're right, but I want to get this out of the way. So, Joe, let's actually start with a negative, where I'm wrong. I got plenty of each. Here we go.
Where Luke was wrong.
Yeah, let me get this out of the way. I was dead-ass wrong about the Gamecocks in Florida. All right, I acknowledged it yesterday. I'll double down today. I took Florida with the spread even as well, you know, favored by 20. And I said, yep, no problem. Florida's going to come out, and Dan Mullen's going to send the message. And boy, did he send a message, but it was the opposite message of what I was anticipating. And that's a big-time win for South Carolina, and it's also an embarrassing loss for Florida. Two things can be true at once. That was a good win for the Gamecocks and a terrible loss for Florida. And it lets you know, for Florida, remember, they fired Will Muschamp after losing to South Carolina. For Florida, they just fired half their staff this weekend, talking about this is a low point. So that lets you know what they think about the Gamecocks as well. That was a bad loss for them. Great win for South Carolina. Could also be a bad loss at the same time for Florida. And I didn't see it coming. I thought Florida would come out still with some fight left. Turns out that's not the case. Dan Mullen and this and company need to regroup this offseason and figure out where things went so wrong this year. But as ugly as it is for Florida, it can still be a good win for the Gamecocks. It was. I never saw it coming, certainly not by 23 points. Props to South Carolina for getting that win.
Where Luke was right.
So I said at the start of the year that the academic schools were going to struggle this year because while all schools got an extra year of eligibility, the kids at these schools, they want to go off and be doctors and lawyers and whatever else. They don't care about coming back to play a fifth year of football for, you know, a mediocre football program. So I told you that the Pac-12, Stanford's going to be the worst team in the Pac-12. And I said Duke's going to be the worst team in the ACC. Northwestern will be the worst team in the Big Ten because they could not take advantage of what everyone else did. In fact, those three schools had the fewest returning starters of any school in their conference. So the data backs up my theory. And so, too, have the games. Stanford got embarrassed. You thought South Carolina against Texas A&M was bad? Stanford said, hold my beer. They had 9 yards of offense in the fourth quarter. They lost by like 50 points. It was terrible Friday night. Stanford got embarrassed. Duke got embarrassed on Saturday. Northwestern hung in there against Iowa because Iowa can't blow anyone out. They can't score. But those three schools are all in last place and a combined 3-15 in their conferences this year. They were behind the eight ball to begin with when it comes to their recruiting profiles. And then especially this year because of COVID, everybody could bring players back if they wanted. Those three schools, they could if they wanted to. The players didn't want to come back. They said, no thanks. Instead of going 1-6 at Duke, I'm going to go make a lot of money as a neurosurgeon, and I'm out of here. So those three schools you knew were going to struggle this year. And, of course, to this point, they have. Two of them got blown out boat race this weekend. Those three schools are having down years. And we'll get to our Tuesday Top 10 coming up in a little bit. But David Shaw at Stanford, he's got to be careful now.
Where Luke was wrong.
Cincinnati. So I have flip-flopped on this. I thought years past, no group of five team to the playoffs. They're not one of the best four teams. But at the start of this year, I said, you know what? This is the year for Cincinnati because of their schedule, because of what I was expecting with the chaos in college football, because of what Cincinnati did last year to show that they are at least close. And I thought they're going to be even better this year. And they got a couple of good teams on their schedule to prove their point. And some of the other teams in college football could struggle. I thought, you know what? This is the year. And I changed my mind. And I thought, no, we are going to get a group of five team, and it's going to be Cincinnati, assuming they win out this year. Well, now let me change back to my initial thought, because I was right all along, that a group of five will not get in, and it won't be Cincinnati. We'll get to the playoff rankings later on this afternoon, as they'll come out again tonight, the updated version. But a clear message has been sent that the committee, they're not interested in Cincinnati to begin with. Not only that, Cincinnati has had three unconvincing wins in a row against three teams with losing records. They're not helping themselves out either. So you can fight for them. They're not even fighting for themselves. So save your time, right? All the people pounding on the table for Cincinnati, save your breath because you care. You seem to care more than Cincinnati does. They almost handed that game away Saturday. The last 3 weeks have come down to, two of them have come down to the final play. Another one was a two-point game late in the third quarter against a one-win team. Cincinnati, they have not played. It is hard to make a case for them right now as a top four team in college football. They're not even playing like the top team in the group of five over the past month. So I was wrong. I was right originally. Then I changed my mind. Turned out that was wrong. Cincinnati will not be a playoff team, and I think at this point, rightfully so.
Where Luke was right.
Scott Frost. So I said yesterday on the show, he was one of my winners of the weekend. And I said, you know, Scott Frost and Nebraska, everybody has written them off. You don't pay attention. You think it's a terrible program. They're not getting the wins. But prior to this weekend, they played three top 10 teams and lost by a combined, I think it was something like 6 points. And then they lost by 9 to Ohio State. So they've played four top 10 teams, and between those four games have lost by a total of like 2 touchdowns between the four games. They're close. Now, eventually, you have to turn those losses into wins. You're not going to be, you know, kept around just because of these moral victories. Sorry, that doesn't count. Right? You're not going to get to a bowl game because you play teams close. Not good enough. And Scott Frost is just 2-17 as an underdog. Eventually, he's going to have to start winning some games that they're not supposed to instead of just competing. At UCF, when he was there, they had the most talent. At Nebraska, they're never going to have the most talent in the Big Ten. This is not the 90s anymore. So he's got to find ways to overcome that talent gap and win. Now he is getting close, so the idea is maybe next year you take that next step where you start winning some of those games. But the reason why he's in this category is because I said all this on the show yesterday, and then once we got off the air yesterday, he was rewarded with a new contract, and it's not really – it's a lot of eyewash, but the idea being – and they put out a statement. He is going to be back next year, and it's supposed to be a commitment to Scott Frost as head coach in Nebraska. And you don't do that unless you believe, hey, we are building something here. Everybody wrote off Scott Frost after that week one loss to Illinois. They're not winning enough, but they are one of the more competitive teams really in all of the country, especially for 3-6. They're probably the best 3-6 team we've actually seen in some time in college football.
Where Luke was wrong.
I thought Kentucky would bounce back this past week. Had lost back-to-back games. You get Tennessee at home. I thought, okay, here's a spot for Kentucky. They're an underdog at home. I told you to take Kentucky if you're a better. I thought they were going to bounce back, and they didn't. They lost to Tennessee, and what was most damning about this was that Tennessee had the football for fewer than 14 minutes in that game and still scored 45 points. I'd have to do the math, right? But that's what, about 3 points a minute? Less than a minute. 3 points every about 50 seconds, which means a touchdown every, you know, about 100 seconds. Are you kidding? And you're supposed to be a defensive program under Stoops? Kentucky has allowed over 30 points now each of the last 3 weeks, losing all three games after being ranked number 11th in the country. I thought this was the chance they're going to bounce back. At home, against Tennessee, they're going to play better, right? They were embarrassed last week against Mississippi State. They'll come back with a better performance. Nope, they lost again, three straight losses, and now you're looking at Kentucky like, man, are they even going to go to a bowl game that is going to be worthwhile? How much further are they going to slide? And props to Tennessee. They had the football for 13 minutes and 50 seconds, and they get a win scoring 45 points. That is impressive work.
Where Luke was right.
Wake Forest, UNC. Now, I'll be honest. The main reason why I took UNC, why I thought UNC would win this game, was because Vegas had them favored for a reason. And I got burned the prior week when Kentucky was a road dog as a ranked team against a 500 Mississippi State. So I said, you know what? I'm trusting Vegas here. They know. So I can't take too much credit here, but I said last week, Wake Forest will be this week's Kentucky. They're going to go to UNC on the road against a 500 team, and they're going to lose. And they did. And my thought process was that if you went back to the start of the season, you thought it would be a role reversal. So UNC has underperformed this year. Wake Forest has overachieved, but still UNC is the better, more talented team. And we saw that play out. It was close on Saturday. You know, it was a great game back and forth, but UNC prevailed in the end at home. You know, they were just a little bit better, and because on paper they are better. And as good as Hartman has been, I do think, on paper at least, I think Howell has a better skill set. I like Dave Clawson, but I think Mack Brown is the better coach. I think UNC is just a little better in a lot of areas. They ended up winning that game Saturday against Wake Forest. Wake Forest really hadn't been tested yet. I mean, UNC probably wasn't really a test either. And the big concern for Wake Forest, they're not a playoff team because of their defense. They've allowed over 500 yards in four of their last five games. That's not a national champion team. And we saw them Saturday against UNC for the second straight year. They let UNC score over 55 points. UNC scored at will. That's not a playoff team. That's not a national champion. And they have no defense whatsoever. Great offense. That's Dave Clawson's calling card. But that defense is not good enough. And it showed Saturday in that loss to UNC.
Where Luke was wrong.
Browns, Bengals. Both teams coming off bad losses. And I said, I trust Cincinnati more. One of these teams is going to bounce back. I think it's going to be Cincinnati. And it wasn't. They got blown out. And so now if you're Cincinnati, you're worried. Bad losses back-to-back to the Jets, then a blowout at home to the Browns, and you think like, oh boy, are the wheels now starting to come off? Was it fun while it lasted? But this is, you know, over with for Cincinnati. Meanwhile, for the Browns, that's the team I should have trusted more. And I should have known because OBJ was unavailable. And Baker Mayfield plays much better without Odell Beckham Jr. Without him, they've have won two-thirds of their games. With him, they're five games under 500 since he arrived in Cleveland. Baker Mayfield posted the best quarterback rating of the season on Sunday. They scored over 40 points. He's better without OBJ. It showed on Sunday, and the Browns get a big comeback win. And now you come out of that game concerned about the Bengals in that division, where the Browns you feel a lot better about, even though they have the same record in the same division. That was a big win for the Browns. I picked the wrong team to bounce back.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Bills, Jaguars, dead wrong. I told you the Bills, I thought this was going to be a blowout. Early, I thought it was a bad matchup for Buffalo. Buffalo can pressure the quarterback. Trevor Lawrence hasn't been good when pressured. And vice on the other side, Josh Allen, I thought was going to have a big day because the Jaguars have a terrible pass defense. And yet Josh Allen had four turnovers, and the Bills scored 6 points, and they lost. Never saw that coming. Biggest upset in Jaguars history. Biggest upset in the NFL this year. They were a 15.5-point underdog, and 1, holding the Bills to only 6 points. Just like Shane Beamer on Saturday, for Urban Meyer, that's a big-time win for Jacksonville. For Trevor Lawrence, who didn't play great but still was the quarterback of the team, right? Big-time win for them to beat a Super Bowl contender and hold them to only 6 points on Sunday. It sends a good message to the rest of the team that, hey, maybe we are building something here. Maybe we do have some potential down the road. That was a good win for Urban and Trevor Lawrence there in Jacksonville on Sunday.
Where Luke was right.
Auburn, Texas A&M. Auburn got a nice win against Ole Miss, but Ole Miss had 9 of 11 starters injured. And so I thought that you couldn't take much from that game and apply it moving forward. And Auburn went to Texas A&M and managed only 3 points against the Aggies, and Texas A&M got a big win. I've been a Dan Mullen supporter. I also am a bit of a Jimbo supporter. When people give him a hard time, I think he's a really good coach. I think he's doing a good job at Texas A&M. And for the last 2 years, I did think they were going to be the 3rd best program in college football. They didn't look like it for most of this season. I shouldn't say college football. I mean the SEC. They didn't look like it for most of this season. But now, as we sit here currently, they are the 3rd best program in the SEC. They're doing a great job in recruiting, and they're one step away. They need one piece of help to once again control their own destiny in that division if Alabama slips up just once. So Texas A&M got a good win against Auburn, and I thought, don't look at that Auburn win against Ole Miss. A little bit of fool's gold from the week prior.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Cardinals. I made the case for the Cardinals to start the afternoon on why we should believe in them, but I didn't. Backup quarterback going to San Fran. I said, this is a chance for the Niners to bounce back. I took the Niners as one of my bets on the show here Friday. And the Cardinals with Colt McCoy played great on the road, scored 31 points. The story out of this one comes from both sides. The Cardinals winning with their backup quarterback. They're now 8-1. We should take them seriously. But on the flip side, you should be a little concerned about Kyle Shanahan. Has lost 11 of 12 at home for the Niners. Probably going to have 4 losing seasons in 5 years. The offense hasn't been that good this year. What's going on there with San Francisco? He's the golden child. Everybody loves Shanahan. You don't hear a bad word about him. He really has not done a good job in San Francisco, and that was highlighted Sunday. That's an embarrassing loss to lose at home by 2 touchdowns to Colt McCoy when you're this offensive genius. That was bad. Niners, that was a bad loss. I thought they were in a good spot on Sunday. They played lousy.
Where Luke was right.
Last one for you. I thought eventually it would catch up to the Raiders, right, where that was like you're grinding yourself at work all week. You get home on Friday and just crash. You fall asleep on the couch at 8 p.m. and sleep until, 9 the next morning. You're working overtime all week, on little sleep, pushing the limits, and eventually it's going to catch up to you. You may feel fine Wednesday, Thursday, you're getting work done, but this isn't sustainable. And that's the idea with the Raiders. All the issues they've dealt with away from football, and they finally caught up to them this past weekend against the Giants. The Raiders were 1-for-6 in the red zone. They had plenty of opportunities. They made too many mistakes. They had some costly turnovers early in the game, and they lost on the road to the Giants when they were favored, to a 2-win Giants team. Eventually, it caught up to them. They had to fire John Gruden because of some issues. You had the Henry Ruggs issues, of course. They released him, and they released their other first-round pick from last year because he's threatening people on TikTok with his guns, and he got released. There's just too much noise around this team. Then they had to go cross-country to the Giants. Eventually, you knew at a certain point, you're wondering, how are the Raiders still pulling this off? You knew it was going to catch up to them, and it did on Sunday. And there you go. Where I was right, where I was wrong. By the way, in my picks, we were 3-5 this past weekend, so you could say I was more wrong than right this past weekend. It was a losing weekend. Did get the Bears last night for Monday Night Football as some sort of consolation, and we'll try to do better this weekend, have a winning week. But that's back-to-back weeks of 3-5 on the picks, so certainly not good enough. But that's where I've been right and wrong here on the show over the past week. Coming up, we will get to our Tuesday Top 10 and also the college football playoff rankings. What should we expect from those tonight? It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Brian Snicker, getting no respect. Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll get to our Tuesday Top 10 coming up in a little bit, plus what to expect from tonight's playoff ranking. But while we have a few moments, I do want to touch on some of the announcements from Major League Baseball yesterday, which did not involve the manager of the Atlanta Braves. Got the Citadel in Pittsburgh tonight, tipping off at 7, coverage at 6:30. I did try to look up, Pittsburgh bands. For all that Pittsburgh's known for, all they may have going for them, I don't know if they have any good bands. The only one I even know is Rusted Root, which was a pretty good 90s band. That's all I got. I don't know if there's a fame. Apparently, according to Ranker, Christina Aguilera is from Pittsburgh. Well, there you go. Otherwise, in terms of bands and musicians, I don't see anybody here that's noteworthy.
The late Gene Kelly was from Pittsburgh.
Oh, how about that? Gene Kelly. Gene Kelly as in Dancing in the Rain, Gene Kelly?
Yes, him.
Ah. My grandmother loved Gene Kelly. So there you go. You got Gene Kelly going for you for Pittsburgh. Major League Baseball announced yesterday that they announced their finalists for the managers of the year in both the AL and the NL. And I was surprised with both of them. For the NL, no Brian Snicker. Now, part of the problem is you have to make your choices at the end of the regular season, right? So it doesn't include the playoffs. And if you looked at the Braves at the end of the regular season, realistically, I mean, how many people thought that they were going to go on that run in the playoffs? Right, and they had just the 12th best record in all of baseball, and they were a team that had won the division the year prior, and even though they dealt with some stuff this year, right, still were only an 88-win team. So I can actually understand why those who were voting at the end of the regular season looked at the National League and didn't think of Snicker as the guy. The managers that they did choose, by the way, was Mike Schilt of St. Louis, who then got fired, oddly enough, like Dwayne Casey, right, when he was the coach of the year for the Toronto Raptors and then got fired. But then also Craig Counsell at Milwaukee and Gabe Kapler at San Francisco. Gabe Kapler, of course, should be included for the job he did with the Giants. I would say Schilt should be included as well because I went back to look. We can always suffer from revisionist history. So I said, let me go back and look at the preseason projections. I knew the Giants were predicted to only win about 70, 75 games. That's why Gabe Kapler was very impressive. But I was curious about the other teams. And so for the Cardinals, for example, I looked at Pecota. And Pecota is it's just this computer system that predicts at the start of every baseball season. It predicts every player's stats and the team's wins and losses and the standings. And for those that are nerdy and into this stuff, everybody knows, Pecota is the one to look at. It's done by Baseball Prospectus. So I went back and I looked at Pecota and said, all right, what did Pecota spit out for 2021? Well, for St. Louis, they had St. Louis as about a 500 team and gave them only a 3% chance of winning the division. I don't know what percentage they had of them actually making the playoffs. But the Cardinals were supposed to be under 500 this year. They make the playoffs. They had that 17-game winning streak. So I said, yeah, I understand Mike Schilt. I also understand the Giants. Gabe Kapler had a great year. But for the Brewers and Craig Counsell, they were, according to Pecota, expected to win the division and had better than a 50% chance of winning the NL Central. They were expected to win about 90 games. Maybe they were even better than most people thought, but going into the season, the idea was, yeah, Milwaukee's going to win this division. And then they did. And so when I look at these awards, for me, it's always about the more impressive job, right? Like Joe Torre used to get the award because the Yankees will win 100 games. It's like, yeah, but they have the best roster. Who did the best job as a manager? It wasn't necessarily Torre, right? Kevin Cash has done a great job getting the most out of the Tampa Bay Rays. So for the Brewers to be picked to finish first and then finish first, all due respect to Craig Counsell, you did your job, but to me that's not good enough to be considered for the award. Like, you did what you were supposed to. I'm more impressed by those who accomplished more. But again, the problem with the Braves was that, I mean, they were coming off a division win. They were one game away from the World Series, and then they won only 88 games. I could get why people would look at Snicker and say, that wasn't very impressive this year. The Braves could have been even better, even though they lost Acuna, they lost Soroka, and they lost Ozuna. But still, right, 88 wins. The problem with all this is we should include the playoffs because as a manager, your job doesn't stop at the end of the regular season. And the managers considered for this award usually are managing in the playoffs anyways. You're not going to give a manager the manager of the year when their team doesn't make the playoffs and they finish in third place. That's not impressive. And the playoffs is where the manager really shines. You're taking your starter out in the third inning. You're going to the bullpen games. And there's no doubt that if you were giving out this award at the end of the postseason, of course Snicker's your manager of the year. Alex Cora would probably be the manager of the year in the AL. And yet Cora wasn't picked as a finalist either. So long story short, I think the big issue is just that you have to make your selections by the end of the regular season. And I don't like that. But I do understand, at the end of the regular season, if you were to ask me, yeah, I could see why Snicker would be left off. Then you watch the postseason, and you say, yeah, no, he should have been the man. He was the manager of the year in baseball this year, mostly for the job he did in the postseason. We'll wrap up Hour 2 next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Babe, you're getting closer. The lights are going dim. The sound of your breathing has made the mood I'm in. All of my resistance.
Wrapping up Hour 2 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Coming up, got still plenty to do. Our Tuesday top 10. What will the college football playoff ranking look like this evening? Why, if you're a fan of the Panthers or Falcons, last night should have frustrated you if you watched Monday Night Football. Got plenty to do coming up in the next hour, the final hour here, as college basketball tips off today. I was supposed to be in Pittsburgh. Didn't happen. That's all right. So we're pretending to be in Pittsburgh while we're in the area here in the Lowcountry. And I'm going to have to go get myself some Pittsburgh food and turn down the AC around here, make it nice and cold, and go look at the river. Jimmy Stewart's from Pittsburgh, and we were just talking yesterday about the actor. Now I'm drawing a blank on his name, who's from Pittsburgh. He changed his name. He'll come to me. I'll get back to you. Oh, Michael Keaton, that's it. Real name Michael Douglas. He's from Pittsburgh. So I'm going to have to go watch some Batman during the commercial break, like I would if I was in Pittsburgh, because I'm sure all they do is show Michael Keaton movies on the hotel TVs. Mark Cuban from Pittsburgh. All sorts of people. Coming up, if you're a Panthers fan or a Falcons fan, last night's Monday Night Football game probably should frustrate you. Plus, I'll also make the case for why the best teams in football right now are actually the best teams in football. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.